The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
These guys have moved through the system together. These guys have succeeded in the system together. And, you know, you can kind of like dream about like, okay, maybe this is a big part of the future. I think it is an interesting aspect when you look at it with Victor and Jordan, where it's like these guys opened the year in the majors together in the outfield, and they'll be spending, you know, some time in Memphis together in the outfield because of some struggles and that need to work on things.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week by my colleague and fellow baseball writer at the Post-Dispatch, a guy who covers the minor leagues organization for the Cardinals better than anyone else, and thought this would be a good week to go to talk to Daniel Guerrero because, look, the minors are kind of in the headlines here, right? Two-thirds of the Cardinals' opening day outfield are now two-thirds of the Memphis Redbirds outfield. Daniel, you were there when manager Oliver Marmol discussed with the reporters about optioning Jordan Walker back to AAA about 1 year almost to the date that they did the same thing last year. What was kind of the explanation? What should fans look for or understand about that move?
Yeah, well, first off, Derek, thanks for the invite on the pod. It's always fun to join in. When you look at the move on, you know, this, this past Wednesday, the Cardinals optioning Jordan Walker for the second time in his career, seems like it had like a little bit different. I mean, it's obviously the same, you know, kind of tone that he's going to go down there to work on things. But I mean, I guess the way Ollie Marmol put it is that it was the best for Jordan Walker's development at this point in his career. I mean, he's still 21 years old. And I know that, especially with a lot of the younger talent that's come up through the Cardinals system, we, you know, there's always that, you know, he's still young. But yes, Jordan Walker is still extremely young. Playing at the major league level, you know, obviously, as we all know, skipped AAA last year, was sent down because his ground ball rate was, you know, just skyrocketing. Obviously, still had some stuff to work on defense, but that ground ball rate at that time, I think it was above 60%, which was a big problem for a guy who coming up to the system was seen as, you know, a middle of the order type hitter. When you look at the option this time around, it comes across as kind of those same things that Jordan Walker's ground ball rate is still pretty high at 50%. His line drive rate is in the single digits, below 5%. I mean, that's not what you want to see for a guy who, you know, you're expecting to eventually grow into being somebody who's going to be a key piece in your lineup. I mean, that having a line drive rate below 5%, obviously, is not great. But you still look at some of the data. I mean, he's still making some hard contact, but swing and miss on pitches low and away, specifically breaking pitches, low and away, chasing a lot of those out of the zone, and, you know, just has a lot of swing and miss to his game right now. And I mean, and it's one of those things where, like, as you noted, it comes at a time similar to last year, and kind of look back on the 2023 Cardinals and you look at that time frame. April was a rough month. That West Coast road trip was not pretty. Season began to spiral pretty early and they just never recovered. This year, obviously, they're, you know, three games below 500 at this point, but there are a lot of positive signs, right, when it comes to the quality starts and the improved defense. So, I mean, it feels like this Jordan Walker option at this point in the year is a little bit different in the sense that this is what's best just for Jordan. And there's no real timeline for him to come back. Ollie Marmol said that Jordan's going to have a few more work days down in Memphis before he starts getting into games. So that means that could be as early as this weekend that he gets into a game for the Redbirds, or Memphis Redbirds. But yeah, I mean, there's no real timeline for him to come back, but it's something that obviously the Cardinals are going to give him time to work on those mechanical adjustments and adjustments with pitch selection.
Yeah, I wanted to, was there an explanation as to why he was getting those days to kind of acclimate, I guess, for lack of a better word, to the work or to the level or to being optioned again? What was the idea behind those days? Was it merely just so he could go there and get in the lab and hit without kind of having to work that evening in a game?
From what I understood, yeah, it's more of a period for him to continue making those mechanical adjustments. I mean, before Jordan was optioned on Wednesday, I mean, he didn't play Sunday and Monday. Ollie Marmol, I mean, those were also, you know, what were kind of described as work days for him to continue making adjustments. DH on Tuesday, sent down Wednesday morning to continue making those adjustments in a lower stakes environment where, pressure is not as high. And, it's the minor leagues. I mean, that's what the minor leagues are for. It's for player development. And the Cardinals believe that this is what's best for Jordan Walker's to continue developing. This was seen as the overall just best move for him, at 21 years old.
Yeah, right now through 20 games, he's played 20 games for the Cardinals in the big leagues. He's hit 155, has an on-base percentage of 239, has a slugging percentage of 259, which speaks to what you were talking about there, that line drive rate that is less than 5%. His isolated power is around 100. His weighted runs created against an average player is about 60% below league average. A lot of that comes from two things. One, the 50% ground ball rate that you, well, three things. The 50% ground ball rate that you mentioned, the 27% strikeout rate, and then the fact that he's seeing more pitches low and away, as you mentioned, the breaking ball, than anybody. They're testing him. You can see him collapse a little bit on that back leg to kind of elevate that pitch or to reach that pitch. One of the things they want to talk to him about doing is opening up a little bit. We saw that more at spring for pitch recognition and kind of an awareness of the strike zone to just give him a better view of it or a longer view of the pitch by opening up a little bit. But also that engages that power that he had, which was gap to gap. One of the things that really stood out, not this spring training, but the previous spring training to scouts, was his ability to kind of drive and turn on pitches into the alleys, right? Like he was just set up with the explosiveness of his swing to cover that much of the field and to utilize it all to his experience, almost like he lined up somewhat like a golfer, say, and then was able to engage, real power from the alley through the alley right there in the biggest part of the ballpark. And that stood out to scouts, but it also stands out when he's not doing it. You've talked to Jordan through this spring. You talked to Jordan through this season. Could you sense that he felt like there was some progress being made with his swing? Where did you get the sense he felt he was at with what he was doing?
I mean, felt like he was making some progress, but it's one of those things where it's like he's somebody who has always come across as very mature for his age. Just has a great understanding of not just like the pressures that can come at the different levels. I mean, obviously he's come into pro baseball as a first round pick, guy who became the top prospect in an organization and also one of the top prospects in baseball before his debut. And there's been a lot of weight on the shoulders, right? I mean, at 20 years old, he's starting in right field for the Cardinals on opening day in a position that he had not played at for more than a year, that he was still getting adjusted to. But I mean, just in how Jordan has come across, as far as with the work that he's making, I mean, obviously I think it's a understanding of like there's a bigger picture, that it's not, something that's like a flip of a switch, but it's more so it's gonna be a process, and it's something that he's gonna continue to work at to get to where he wants to be.
One of the things that you mentioned that I find really interesting, you've gone back to that age, and I've mentioned it on the podcast before that he is about the age that, hitters are in their junior year, or younger, but usually their junior year of college. So he would be doing these adjustments as in college against college pitching, while he's growing into his strength, while he's growing into his frame, while he's growing into his ability. And instead he's doing it, or he was doing it, at the highest level in the world against pitchers paid millions and millions of dollars to just overwhelm him, to overpower him, not to get him out, but to overpower him. That's a real challenge. And it's, mentioned it on the podcast, and I want to stress that I'm hesitant at the comparison, but it's a natural one because of the size of the two individuals and the natural exit velocity they get from that size, that strength, and that leverage of the swing. And that's, of course, Aaron Judge with the Yankees. When he was Jordan Walker's age, he was in college and he wasn't hitting for a whole lot of power. He was just starting to, right? That year, that age group, that year, he was starting to hit for college power with an aluminum bat against college pitchers. Jordan's doing it with a wood bat again against major league pitchers. It's a you can see the challenge when you put it in those terms. You can see the upside too with his ability if he can figure it out. But you also, I think it's fair to question, like, well, what do the Cardinals expect from him? Did they expect this power to manifest at an age when, it's not there for other players? Other players are in college when they're going through this. and not facing this level of pitching. So was the Cardinals' expectations a little off with him?
I wouldn't say that. No, that's an interesting question, just because I think because of how advanced you saw him as a hitter in Double A, right? And that's one of those things where, you know, Double A is an important level because that's kind of a separator level where a lot of guys,
great point,
as you know, kind of separate from the pack or kind of fall behind in terms of their status as, you know, prospects and their ceiling. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he backed that up with that fall league where he was one of the top hitters out there among top prospects, and backed it up again in spring training. So, I mean, you could see that the expectation they had for him was something that, you know, there was data to back it up with, right? It was
right. It's there was reason, I mean, for the fast forward.
Right. So, I mean, it made sense. And I think a part of, I mean, so, I mean, I think they're just kind of like that formula, right? Where it comes to just his makeup and it comes to the size and it comes to just the numbers that he had produced at a lot of important stages, right? Because the fall league, I know you described it as, you know, like a finishing school for prospects. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's there were a lot of, I think, key signs there that, you know, the expectations for Jordan Walker to get into Pro Bowl this quickly, that he could kind of catch up to speed of what was the hope for him.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
When he returned from AAA last year, he did so and put together a really strong season that finished at .276 average, but .342 on base percentage and a .445 slugging percentage. So not the slug that, you know, they expect from him eventually, but that's pretty strong when you look mm-hmm. at what he did last season complete and, you know, hinted at exactly kind of what you're talking about. Like he's done it at the big league level. So there's this natural expectation that he'll continue to advance at the big league level. You know, it's just the big leagues adjusted to him and challenged him. And maybe at the same time he was working on things, what opponents saw as a whole. Does it feel different to you? Does last year's demotion to this year's demotion, does it feel differently at all to you? Or is it just an echo? Is it almost like is time starting to repeat itself?
I guess I've been looking at it like in a couple of different ways. Because I think when you look at it just from what this means for Jordan Walker, in a sense, it does feel a little bit like an echo where that ground ball rate became an issue again. And that was one of the, obviously, that, as we mentioned, that's one of the big things that, you know, he'll be working on improving. I think like you said, the swing and miss with the pitches away, with the breaking pitches, kind of working on keeping that backside up and not trying to have to like make up for it, but being able to just attack, having it have a solution to how pitches are attacking him, that, I guess in a sense, like just the demotion itself for him feels a little bit like an echo in those things of him working on mechanical adjustments. I think the other way I've also kind of looked at it is in a sense of like the state of the team, because I felt like last year, Jordan Walker's demotion, even though he had that hitting streak to begin his career, some productive numbers at the major league level, despite that ground ball rate, it almost signaled like, you know, something was kind of up with the team. Because of that tough stretch to begin the year, because of that bad road trip on the West Coast, sending their, you know, top prospect down, who was, you know, a headliner on opening day, because at 20 years old, starting in right field, I mean, this is the guy who a lot mm-hmm. of people have been waiting for. In a sense, that felt like, okay, that this is getting a little bit concerning of the way this season is heading. But it does feel like this demotion this time around is not as alarming because of the other, some of the strengths this team has kind of showed in the first few weeks of the season. But I guess just for Jordan Walker himself, it feels a little bit like an echo with that ground ball rate, but it's weird because it does feel a little bit like deja vu, like you mentioned, with, you know, the timing of it, with kind of the same messaging of some of the things that he'll be working on. It does feel a little bit similar.
And he'll find Victor Scott there playing center field for Memphis. Right. Victor Scott, speaking of similarities, Victor Scott jumped from Double A to the majors, just as Jordan Walker did the year before. The reason for Victor Scott's jump was different than Jordan's. Jordan, you know, had that spot cleared for him and was able to compete in spring training. Victor Scott had a great spring training, but then injuries Tommy Edman not being available for opening day or any of spring training because of a wrist surgery that he had this past offseason. And then Dylan Carlson won the center field job, but in the final days out there in Arizona, collides with Jordan Walker, separates his shoulder, has been on the injured list ever since, opened the season on it, though he's making his way back. And in some ways, Victor Scott's assignment or optioning to AAA Memphis is a sign of where the Cardinals think center field is going to be. Michael Ciani's played well. Lars Nootbaar will play some. It sure seems like Dylan Carlson is at least on the horizon there. What do you see ahead for Victor Scott? What is his move to AAA has been? He did a lot of good things defensively. His speed was on display, but he also struggled to produce offensively, so much so that it was a fair question as to look, is what they're asking of him fair? I know it's a professional sport, but you don't want to put a guy in a spot where he's overwhelmed and then has limits his development, when he could be just so superb, and has such upside. But where's the transition for him to AAA gone? What's it been like?
He's appeared in just two games so far, has a hit in, eight plate appearances, struck out a couple of times. The one hit was, single, like it hit the ball the other way to shortstop, kind of deep in the hole, and shortstop was able to get it, but Victor's speed was going to make that a single regardless, which is kind of the contact of it and just kind of the placement of that hit. Probably one of the smallest sample sizes you can look at, but right. I mean still yeah. still just kind of Fair. getting the ball on the ground. But I think a positive sign just from having seen him progress from high A into double A last year, once you start seeing him kind of spray the ball around the field, kind of get the ball a little bit more on the line, that's really his game. I mean, that was something that even I remember talking to Victor on the phone last year in his couple weeks after his promotion to double A. I remember him describing that first couple weeks of just things not falling. He was in a stretch where it was about, I think it was like 14 or maybe 16 at bats where he didn't have a hit, and he was getting a little antsy, like, okay, things are gonna start falling because the contact is there, things just aren't lining up yet. And then obviously takes off in double A, literally and figuratively, starts getting on base again, shows that 80 grade speed on the base path. But I think once you start seeing him kind of spray the ball on the line across all fields, that's going to be a sign that, what Victor Scott was in 2023 is that's what he's going to continue to be in 2024, because that's part of, his game, his line drive approach. That's something that on a couple of different times he's referenced. Going back to his college days at West Virginia University, he felt like, I think it was a sophomore season where he thought, he had to be a power hitter. He was hitting in the three hole. And he felt like he needed to search for power and, be able to, hit the ball out of the park and into the gaps to drive people in, when it then eventually kind of clicked to him that, that's not who he is. That's not his style, that he's going to be a guy who is going to make solid contact and spray the ball around the field and get on base and be the one that gets driven in and turn singles into doubles and doubles into triples with the stolen base guy, who's going to, score from, go first to third or possibly even score from first to home on a double. That's a style that came to him while in college. And I think that's what will be a positive sign for him, as he continues to get more at bats in Memphis. Obviously the defense is something that was never a concern. The base running was something that, really wasn't much of a concern, because a lot of those things can translate pretty easily, right? Because they're more controlled.
And we saw it, yeah.
Right, right. And so, just when it comes to what Victor can do on offense, I think, yeah, like I said, once he starts hitting a ball on, gets that line drive right up and is spraying it around the field, that's when you'll know that, okay, Victor Scott, like, he can be the prospect that, he kind of elevated himself to be last year.
I'm interested in seeing how both of them take to the fact that they're a level lower and are going to face a different level of pitching, maybe more, let's say, accommodating level of pitching, style of pitching, and what that means for, like, how they individually, but also how the Cardinals view that success, right? Like, is there almost like a lens of, okay, that's good success for AAA, but say Victor Scott's game is so fast, and you mentioned he's getting the ball in the air, but say he, like, kind of increases some of that production with balls on the ground, where his speed is just beyond the level, you know, so he's creating production and he's getting steals and he's doing, you know, running the bases. But if they trace it back to the fact that, well, they, you know, that's more because his speed is ahead of the level and that won't translate to the majors. I'm really interested in seeing how the team and the individual players look at performance at AAA. And will it be only through the lens of how will that translate, as you said, or will it be through, well, that's good that they need that positive reinforcement. They need that confidence. They need that just like anybody needs the warm embrace of better statistics. I can imagine just, you know, just from talking to hitters in the past at the big league level or at the minor league level, there's probably going to be some relief for either of them when they walk up to the plate and on the scoreboard isn't their major league batting average. You know, that's not looming down on them from whatever third deck and stuff like that. They get a chance to start over, start fresh, start with a bigger number. And maybe that alone, just having some return on the work that they're doing, some positive reinforcement is what the team is going to look for, is what the individual is going to look for. And then I guess down the road, look at, you know, through the lens of how does it translate? Because that's going to be the question now. I am like, right. That's what the Cardinals have invited is they've invited this question of, okay, sure. You know, these guys have performed in the minors, but here's another attempt, third attempt, second attempt, whatever it is, to see how it gets to the majors. And that's such a gap, such a wide gap. What, you know, Daniel, you and I've talked, have you heard from others about like just how the leap from AAA to the majors is perceived, like how big a jump it is? You know, you talked about AA being a separator. A lot of teams see AA and AAA pretty close together. When you talk about like the level of competition, but it's like a continental shelf up to the majors. What's the feedback you get on kind of just the how coming out of the pandemic, how coming out of the restructuring, how coming out of the distillation of the minor leagues into smaller rosters, how wide that gap is between AAA and the majors?
I think you can look at it from a couple of different angles too. I think obviously one of them is just from the pure talent aspect. And I, you know, it's funny. I think Mason Wynn is kind of an example of that, right? Where he comes up at the end of last year after a strong season in AAA, strikes out a lot and searching on offense. And you can, I mean, spoke about the difficulties of the level of the pitchers, right? Where Tripp, you know, he remembered speaking to him in May when he was, you know, kind of picking things up in AAA and talked about the gap. I mean, from the AA to AAA. Sure, this guy's in AAA, but you might be facing a guy who has kind of bounced around in the majors as well, who has major league experience, but, you know, is trying to work their way back up, or, you know, who's still playing professional baseball. And the way they attack hitters obviously is a lot different. I mean, especially when you get to the majors, you know, data and scouting reports are a lot more thorough. And I mean, there's a lot of ways, there's a lot of info in how to get guys out. And,
right. Yeah.
And you have, you mean,
as, that's as their sole goal.
Right.
Imagine going to work every day and having somebody who is paid 10 times what you make to like make your job impossible.
Right.
Not just hard, not just difficult, impossible. It's such an interesting thing where you have AAA is a little bit about the individual and about development. And it's through that perspective. Whereas you get to the major leagues and it's just about, I mean, they say competition, but it's about dominating.
Right. And you have guys in AAA who are working on certain things. I mean,
right.
Prospects who are trying to refine breaking pitches or work, you know, continue developing that changeup, or maybe guys who are just, you know, have a live arm, but are trying to work on command. I mean, but in the majors,
yeah,
you're playing to win. You're playing for, it could be a team that, you know, is out of it in September, but they're still playing for a spot on a roster. They're still playing to try to win a game to prove something, as opposed to playing to just better themselves.
Right. We have an example of that. You know, we've talked about Victor Scott and Jordan Walker, but also in the past few weeks here has been the demotion of Andre Pallante and Zach Thompson to AAA. You know, that's four members of the Cardinals opening day roster that by the end of April are back in AAA. And that's not, I mean, it's not unusual, right? I mean, roster churn is real. And certainly, you know, Pallante kind of took one for the team by finishing out that game, knowing that with every pitch he threw, he was getting closer to being optioned to AAA. But it's a great point you make about like somebody working on stuff. They've telegraphed what Andre Pallante is going down to AAA to work on. He could go into he's going to start down there so that he gets bulk innings. And so he can throw pitches over and 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 over again. The scouting report is out. Like teams phasing Andre Pallante are going to be like, well, we're going to see a lot of the same pitch. We're going to see a lot of it in the zone. So I think it'll be interesting to see like just how quickly like teams go up there and they're like, well, we're swinging against this guy. Right. Mm-hmm. And what does that do to the work that Pallante is trying to get in? You're right about that. It's such an interesting level in the regards to it. It's sort of a controlled lab environment with a splash of competition because that's part of what, you know, players learn at that level. But it can be so individual, and AAA might be the most difficult of them all in that regard, because you have guys who are there who go, I belong in the big leagues, I'm being held back. And then you have guys freshly up saying, oh my gosh, is this the level for me? But man, I'm on my way to the big league. So you have this contrast of frustration and maybe even some anger that they're at that level. And then a few doors down and a locker or two down, you know, you have someone who's elated and thrilled because they feel like they're on the rapid rise to the majors, as opposed to the slower fall. So gosh, I am glad you brought that up, because Pallante and Thompson are going there to work on specific things, and opponents are going to know that. And the reaction of opponents will be very interesting too.
Yeah. And I mean, and just on the other quick point, I mean, like I had mentioned with that, like Mason Wynn kind of angle, it's like, there's also, I think, a sense of guys come up and it's like, cool, I'm in the majors, and let me show everybody why I deserve to be here. And, you know, trying to do a little bit too much and kind of letting the game speed up on them. I mean, I think that plays a factor in into guys finding initial struggles. And I think Mason's a good example of that, where pitchers attacked him. He, you know, was excited to be here and was trying to do maybe a little bit too much. And now you see him, what he's off to doing this year in the first month. And it shows that, okay, you know, he can play at this level.
What level of confidence should the Cardinals have that their future outfield is currently, or that 2/3 of their future outfield, maybe even near future outfield, is at AAA Memphis? What level of confidence should they have there that they have two impact guys who have been in the majors before, potential impact guys who will be back to turn that potential impact into actual impact?
I think you kind of look at who those guys are, because they're definitely different guys when you look at Victor Scott II and Jordan Walker.
Sure.
Right. Where you have Victor Scott, who has always been a natural center fielder, has been a Gold Glover at the minor league level, who is a guy who understands his game, who has a lot of speed, who is going to contact oriented approach to get on base and, you know, create havoc in that sense. Whereas, you know, Jordan continued to work on improving in center and right field, but somebody who is projected middle of the order guy, somebody who's going to drive in runs, who's going to have some power. And it's kind of an interesting thing, like you said, where it's like, I feel like if the progression of these guys had kind of gone on a similar timeline, like in the sense, like with Mason and Jordan, were progressing through the minors and was at Double A together, the second and third base spots on what you were looking at, you know, as possible as a possible big league infielder progressing through the minors together, and you could see like a glimpse of that, like, okay, like these guys have moved through the system together, these guys have succeeded in the system together, and you know, they're playing at an important level, and you know, you can kind of like dream about like, okay, maybe this is, you know, a big part of the future. I think it is an interesting aspect when you look at it with Victor and Jordan, where it's like these guys opened the year in the majors together in the outfield, and they'll be spending, you know, some time in Memphis together in the outfield because of some struggles and that need to work on things. I've harped on a little bit of the age, but I think you kind of, that's one of the big things that you fall back on is just how young they are. Like you said, I mean, Jordan Walker is college junior, you know, age. Victor Scott, I mean, has progressed through the system. You know, in his first full year, or after he just needed one full season basically in the minors to get to the majors. So I mean, I think you look at just the tracks of these two guys, where I think on the surface level you see, okay, they're 2/3 of the starting outfield in opening day are now in Memphis. That sounds worrisome, but then you kind of look at, okay, where the state of the team is right now, you look at their developmental tracks and the age and the way they've kind of progressed to the majors in very quick ways, I think that is part of the you know, the fallback that you look at, like, okay, like there's not, it's not as an alarming thing as maybe it looks like
Yeah.
from the outside.
Yeah, as we're talking, the Orioles option Jackson Holliday, the top
Ooh.
prospect in all of baseball. They option him to the minors. You know, there's lots of examples, and there's no real like larger truth to take from. I mean, you could look at Jared Kelenic's his career with the Mariners, and you know, optioned out same time each year there for struggles. Cardinals played him last year. It sure seemed like he was the best player on the field. And now he's an Atlanta Brave. So, you know, the top prospect mantle, the top hitting prospect mantle is it can be one that that elevates a player's profile, but also heightens unfairly or heightens unrealistically the perspective, because it's all based on likelihood, on probability. It's all based on like, well, this is the projection. A lot of times projections are like predictions. They can be wrong right from the start, and they can also take a long time to reach. So we'll see. I mean, no one is saying that these players who are moved around or moved down, that they're suddenly lacking talent, but you know, they got work to do to perform at the highest level. Speaking of which, projection, tell me some of the young guys quickly here. Let's hit on some of the young guys who are performing well in the minors. You know, Sam Reverse has had a strong start, it seems. What are some guys who have stood out to you in
yeah,
the
I mean,
early weeks of the minor league season?
You mentioned the first guy, Sam Robertson. I mean, he is another, I mean, young, he's 22 years old. I mean, so, I mean, younger than Victor, or around the same age as Victor, a little bit older than Jordan. Two ERA in his first four starts. He's actually pitching right now for Memphis. He's allowed one run through his first four innings.
Ooh, play by play. Live update
so,
on a post-dated podcast.
Right. And I mean, but you're looking at, I mean, his last start before today's, I mean, struck out, matched a career high in strikeouts with nine. Set a career high in innings with eight. I mean, but you look at just kind of the pure stuff. I mean, what he got swings and misses on. I mean, swings and misses on 38% of his pitches. I mean, a lot of that was on his changeup. I mean, it's kind of like that high 80s, like power type change. I mean, it's something that, and he's kind of an interesting prospect in the sense that he's not somebody who's going to blow things by you, right? I mean, I think we talk about like pitching prospects a lot with like Tink Kent and kind of the live arm and kind of the just the pure stuff. But in Robertson, you know, has. You know, is able to mix things around. I mean, he doesn't blow it by guys. He understands his style. And I mean, he's off to a strong start in his first four games. I mean, he's kept Jacksonville to one run through his first four innings today at this point and at the time of this recording. So he's one of the guys that has stood out pretty well in the Cardinals system. I mean, and even if you go lower down the system, one of the interesting names that has kind of stood out, I mean, to me, is Quinn Matthews, who, you know, didn't get into a game last year after getting drafted in the fourth round out of Stanford. Is a left-hander. And it's kind of an interesting pitching line because ERA below one in 12 innings. He's had three starts, but, you know, they've been short starts, kind of laboring ones. But he struck out 25 guys in those 12 innings. But
25 strikeouts in 12 innings?
But he's also walked nine. So, I mean, the swing and miss stuff is definitely there, right? Where it's like, okay, maybe obviously it's only three starts into his professional career, but 25 strikeouts. I mean, he's a guy who pitched in the now defunct, I guess, Pac-12 for Stanford. You know, obviously had that college experience and is in low A right now in Palm Beach. Obviously that level is very projectable. I mean, you have a lot of guys who are very young. Playing at that level, we're all basically kind of getting their pro career started. But I mean, you look at just the swing and miss stuff that he has. I mean, it's there.
Give me two other guys. Well, first, how's Sejacy doing?
Sejacy, you know, he got a little bit off to a slow start in AAA, which I mean, felt kind of like a carryover from last year. In his introduction to the level, but I mean, you look at what he's doing now. He's starting to hit the ball with some regular hard contact. He's batting, you know, above 280, close to 290 in that range. He's played a few different infield spots for Memphis. He's played kind of bounced around mainly short and second base. But you know, you look at what he's kind of the bats that he's taking now, you know, you're starting to see that guy that kind of showed up in spring training towards the end of spring, right? And that's, you know, kind of pure hitting prospect that we saw in the Cardinals system last year.
Just give me one other guy to watch. You know, just 10 seconds on him, maybe because of the role he's in, the assignment he's been given, or an early performance. What's another guy to stand out?
I guess one of the guys who hit a, you know, showed light tower power last night. I mean, Joshua Baez has kind of gotten off to a you know, a notable start. I mean, he did a massive home run for Peoria yesterday. He's batting around like 260 something, but you look at his last seven or eight games, you know, he has about nine hits and I think 25 at bats. I mean, average well above 350. But I mean, you look at just kind of the quality at bats. I mean, strikeouts were a problem last year, but I mean, when you a guy who has raw plus plus power is able to make contact, I mean, you're seeing that now in his introduction to high A.
So a high line drive weight. That is Daniel Guerrero. You can find all of his work at stltoday.com and in the pages of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. That's also where you can find all of our constant Cardinals coverage. Lynn Worthy is in New York, leaving us behind to do a podcast. Right, Daniel? We had fun. Thank you very much for joining me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for the invite. It's always great hopping on the BPIB.
The Best Podcast in Baseball is available wherever you get your podcasts. Of course, you can also find it at stltoday.com and then on Stitcher or iTunes. You can rate and review the podcast on iTunes. I do go in there and read the reviews and see what direction the community of BPIB listeners want us to go next or what they want us to continue. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Subscriptions make the sponsorships possible, and sponsorships make the podcast possible. The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis, and it is a production of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, stltoday.com, and me, St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. Talk to you soon. I'm off to Detroit to see the Tigers play. It's been a long time, so I'm looking forward to some Pizza Popolis and some Werner's Ginger Ale, right? It's been since 2007, so when Bobby Abreu took aim at the auxiliary press box. So I guess it's been a while. So I'm hoping there's still Werner's, right? Still got Werner's ginger ale.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.